In the spirit of reconciliation, Myeloma Australia acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to the elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today. Welcome to My Conversations, Myeloma Australia's podcast series. These podcasts are written and produced by our myeloma support nurses for people living with myeloma, their family and friends. We aim to deliver interesting and up-to-date information on myeloma in a portable and convenient way through our podcast shows.
Welcome everyone to this episode of My Conversations, a Myeloma Australia podcast. My name is Nella Coombe and I'm the Manager of Nursing and Patient Services at Myeloma Australia, and I'm very pleased to be your host today. Understanding infection is an important aspect and comes hand in hand for the person living with myeloma. As we know, myeloma affects how the immune system works, and also the treatments for myeloma can impact the function of the immune system. I'm thrilled today to welcome Dr. Anna Kelf from the Alfred Hospital to talk more about the relationship between myeloma and the immune system and the aspects that are important for you to know. Dr. Anna Kelf is a clinical and laboratory haematologist at the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne and the Myeloma Research Group at Monash University. Anna has recently been awarded her PhD investigating novel therapies for patients with newly diagnosed and relapsed myeloma. Congratulations, Anna. Anna has published her research in peer-reviewed journals and is an investigator for several myeloma-related clinical trials. Dr. Kelf is a member of the Myeloma Australia Medical Scientific Advisory Group, also known as MSAG, and the Australian Myeloma Research Consortium Research and Advisory Committee, AMARC, as well as the ALLG Myeloma Working Group. Very busy and so pleased to have you here, Anna. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your Friday morning to chat with me.
Thank you very much, Nella, for inviting me to come along today.
So we're going to talk about myeloma and the immune system. It's probably a good place to start, just a little overview of myeloma, if you wouldn't mind.
Great. So myeloma is a cancer of plasma cells and is actually the second most common hematologic malignancy after non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And although not many out in the community know until they're diagnosed or someone is they know is affected by it, around almost 2,500 Australians will be diagnosed with myeloma this year. Healthy plasma cells normally make immunoglobulin or antibodies which help the body to fight infection and help with our immunity. But these malignant or cancerous plasma cells in patients with myeloma make abnormal antibodies, otherwise known as a paraprotein, which is actually dysfunctional and doesn't help fight infection at all.
Thanks, Anna. It's a really tricky concept to get your head around sometimes, and we use lots of big words and sometimes use multiple words to describe the same thing. So do you find that when you're talking to people in the clinic that there's a particular way that you like to describe that myeloma protein or antibodies? Do you have a way to explain that? And also, can you tell us a little bit more about how the immune system works and the different roles of the cells involved in the immune function?
Yeah, so it is a very tricky concept to get your head around, I think. And I guess I always draw a picture for patients of what a normal antibody is, and I use that to help patients to understand where the heavy chain and light chain come from, but drawing the basic structure of the antibody. So the immune system itself is actually very complex, as you alluded to. And I can tell you from when I was a university student and studying for my physician exam, it took quite a bit of time for all of us to get our heads around it. So the immune system can really be divided up into two sort of functions. So what we call the innate immunity and the adaptive immunity. So the innate immune response is an immediate immune response, and adaptive happens a little bit down the track, but it is a lot more long lasting. So the innate immunity involves cells, and these are all different types of white blood cells that people might see on pathology reports, such as neutrophils, macrophages, mast cells, basophils, natural killer cells. And these can help in immune response to instances such as bacterial infection. Adaptive immunity, that's the immunity that doesn't come on as quickly but is longer lasting, is where the plasma cells come in. So this is driven by different groups of white blood cells to ones that I've mentioned. And to make things more complex, is actually divided into further two groups. So cellular immunity, and so that's driven by T cells, and then humoral immunity, and that's driven by B cells, which mature into plasma cells, which then make antibodies. So if you can, it is complex, but it all interacts and is very important to understand when treating patients with myeloma.
Yeah, I often find myself doodling little pictures in clinic as well, and feeling like I'm moonlighting as an artist/nurse trying to explain these things, because it is really hard, and sometimes actually seeing a picture of it can be helpful. And maybe if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I really just want to understand a bit more about what Anna's just said before we move on, maybe bring up a picture of the different immune cells to try and the antibodies, so that you can see what it looks like. And it might just help you to understand as we move through this podcast. Anna, can you tell us a little bit about how myeloma treatments affect the immune system?
So I think just before we go on to treatment, I think it's probably good to talk about how myeloma itself affects the immune system.
Yeah, so sorry, I missed that one.
No, that's fine. That's fine. So myeloma itself is very immunosuppressive, and it's really important, concept to get around. So even before treatment is started, and particularly when someone's newly diagnosed, that's often the most immunosuppressed that patients will be early on in their disease course. So as I stated earlier, those cancerous plasma cells or myeloma cells, they make antibodies which don't work. So they're really redundant. The plasma cells can suppress production, suppress the normal, sorry, the cancerous plasma cells can suppress the production of normal antibodies by the normal plasma cells. And this results in a condition called hypogammaglobulinemia. So patients may have heard that term bandied around in the clinic. And then chemicals released or proteins released by the myeloma cells can actually suppress the function of those cells that I've mentioned earlier, T cells and NK cells. So affecting both that adaptive and innate immune response. And there may also be so much myeloma in the bone marrow that there's reduced production of all the normal bone marrow cells required for these immune responses, particularly the neutrophils. So affecting that innate or very quick response to bacterial infections. And then if we move on to how the treatments affect the immune system, all the medications and therapies really that we use to treat myeloma can affect the immune system in various ways. And so if I run through just briefly, if we start at the backbone of treatment, which is corticosteroids such as dexamethasone or prednisolone, these can impair the function of T cells in particular, but also can impair function of neutrophils at higher doses. Patients receiving immunomodulatory agents such as lenalidomide or pomalidomide and proteasome inhibitors such as bortezomib or carfilzomib are also at risk of infection. The proteasome inhibitors also impair the T cell function and are associated with reactivation of the chickenpox virus, varicella zoster, or the herpes virus. And both of these classes of drugs can also cause neutropenia by just suppressing the normal bone marrow function. A newer agent which has become available to patients through the PBS recently is daratumumab. So this is not a chemotherapeutic agent. This is actually a monoclonal antibody, an immune therapy. And this actually targets specifically the myeloma cells with a protein called CD38 on the surface of those cells. But it can also affect other cells to a lesser degree, which also express CD38. And so this can also increase the susceptibility to viral and bacterial infections, as well as suppressing the normal plasma cells there and reducing the normal amount, normal antibodies. So really, I think already patients are immunosuppressed and we add these treatments on, which can affect multiple facets of their immune system. So it's an important aspect to consider, and we'll talk about, I guess, how we can prevent that a little bit later on.
Yeah. And so, you know, so much information there to take in. From what I heard, Anna, you know, at the start, when people are diagnosed with myeloma, they're actually, their immune system is affected and not working as well because of the myeloma itself. Do we see that as well at diagnosis, that people have a suppressed immune system? What does that look like at diagnosis?
So some people, I guess, can present with recurrent infections, and particularly infections associated with low immunoglobulin, so recurrent pneumonias, pneumococcal or hemophilus pneumonia, because patients need their antibodies to help fight those type of infections. So there can be particular sort of pattern of infections that people have. They can also present with neutropenia and be quite unwell related to that. And then when we start treatment, it's really trying to balance the toxicity of that with trying to get a response of the disease. And that's really, I think, where the preventative measures that we can do really come into play to try and get treatment into people and trying to reduce that toxicity, the infectious risk for them.
Going to ask, just mention that all of the different treatments that you've talked about seem to affect the immune system in different ways. Does that change the advice that we give to patients or the way that we try and protect them against infections, or is it just a kind of good to know that from a medical perspective, or is there stuff there that our patients need to know specifically depending on the treatment that they're on?
Yeah, so I think in broad terms, I think all patients with myeloma the infectious risk should be approached in a standard way for all patients. And although the effect of the medications on the immune system is varied, because we often use all these medications in combination, then that effect can compound the infectious risk, whether it's innate immunity, adaptive immunity, and the different sort of cells involved. So I think in terms of prevention of Medicaid, I think it's pretty standard what we put patients on in terms of prophylaxis with antibiotics, vaccinations we'd recommend for most patients. But then there are additional therapies like GCSF for patients who have neutropenia, intravenous immunoglobulin for patients who are hypogammaglobulinemic or have those low normal immunoglobulins. So I think even though they affect the immunity in different ways, there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah, great. And now we're seeing, as you said, with the monoclonal antibodies, these new, newer sort of styles of treatments actually utilizing aspects of the immune system to treat the myeloma. It's a whole nother topic and probably deserves its own podcast in its own right. But is there anything that, you know, that springs to mind that you think would be good for patients to know in the context of this conversation?
I guess there are several different types of neuroimmune-based therapies that are out there now. So daratumumab is the main one that a lot of patients would have most likely heard of, given it's now available in the PBS, and that's an anti-CD38 antibody. But we've also got newer agents which actually, I guess, more activate the T cells. So a class of drug called BiTEs, or bispecific T cell engagers. There's also antibodies with drug or warheads attached to them, which deliver the drug directly to the myeloma cell to kill, and they're called ADCs, or
antibody drug conjugate. Is
yes.
that it?
Yes, yes.
There's okay. so many acronyms.
I know, antibody yeah. drug. Hold a little pause. There are also antibody drug conjugates, or ADCs, and then the CAR T cells, which are also very exciting, which are currently available in clinical trial. And so these immune therapies really boost the host's immune system. But as you said, that's a huge topic. And there are implications for infections, but they're pretty specific to these therapies. So I think we'll leave that to its own podcast.
Yeah, sounds great. Are there any other risk factors or things that come into play when we're talking about someone's immune system and how immune compromised they are? People who have myeloma, putting the myeloma itself and the treatments aside, which we've already talked about.
Yeah, so it's important to consider other comorbidities that patients have, because these can have a significant impact on the outcomes, disease outcomes, and also, I guess, the risk of infection. And as we know, the median age of diagnosis of myeloma is around 70. So there are a lot of older patients with age-related complications such as cardiovascular problems or kidney disease. So it's really important to look at the patient as a whole. And I guess the older they are, the frailer they are, the more susceptible they are to infection and may not be able to tolerate infection as well as a younger patient. So frailty is something that I've spoken on before, but that's really important to consider. So we talked about, I guess, the type of therapy. So some patients have, we talked about the therapy, the IMiDs and proteasome inhibitors, but there's also, younger patients will undergo autologous stem cell transplantation. And so there's significant immunosuppression related to that, because the bone marrow is completely wiped out by the chemo and patients have to wait for stem cell recovery. Or they have infusional chemotherapy if they've got very active, rapidly growing disease in combination with some of those agents. And I think also as disease progresses over time, how much treatment they've had in the past, because once you've had someone newly diagnosed who's responded really well to therapy and may have their disease under control, someone a lot further down their pathway of myeloma, if they've had multiple lines of treatment, the immune system doesn't recover as well after each of those subsequent lines of treatment. So they may be more susceptible than someone who's earlier in their disease course.
Yep, great. Thanks so much, Anna. We're just going to take a short break. We'll be back really soon. Do you want to speak with a myeloma nurse with a wealth of knowledge about myeloma? Myeloma Australia's telephone support line is available Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Australian Eastern Time. Call 1-800-MYELOMA or 1-800-693-566 and a specialist myeloma nurse will answer your call in confidence. Welcome back to My Conversations. I'm Nella Coombe and I'm with Dr. Anna Kelf today discussing myeloma and the immune system. So we've talked a little bit about some of the things that we do to help people you know, reduce the risk of them picking up infections or managing infections, preventing them. Can you tell us a little bit more detail about what we do from a medical perspective? And then maybe we can talk about as well what people can do for themselves to help minimize their risk of picking up things.
Yeah, so I think it's really important at the start, as part of education to the patient and their caregivers, their families when they're diagnosed with myeloma, to also talk about the infectious risk and sort of highlight some of the points that we've made earlier. So I think simple things first, and I guess, you know, particularly in current times, simple things like hand hygiene, socially distancing, masking up, although hopefully that won't be for too long. But then other aspects which we've touched on already. So I guess we can talk about vaccinating people and giving them preventative antibiotics. And so it's really important for patients to have their yearly flu vaccine. And sometimes we recommend two vaccines depending on how immunosuppressed they are. As I stated earlier, there are some specific types of infection that myeloma patients are more susceptible to, with the pneumonia infection, so the pneumococcal and haemophilus vaccines that they can get through their GP. And then I think with the there's now a shingle, an inactivated varicella zoster vaccine, called Shingrix, which I've just started encouraging patients to have, because the Zostervax is live and we really should avoid live vaccines in myeloma patients because of the immunosuppression and risk of having a live vaccine.
Can you just do a little recap on the Zoster virus and what what other people might know that as, because I just
sure.
We do get lots of calls about it.
Yeah, so the zoster virus, so that's the chickenpox virus or the shingles virus. And so most of us are actually exposed to chickenpox when we're kids and have a reasonably mild infection. And then even though we respond, we recover from that infection, we've still got that infection lying dormant in our bodies. And for most of us who don't have immunosuppression at any time in our lives, that remains inactive and doesn't cause any problems. But in patients with myeloma, the normal mechanisms which keep that virus suppressed aren't there. And additionally, the medications we give, the proteasome inhibitors in particular, but we've also seen it in patients on the IMIDs, such as lenalidomide, can get reactivation of the chickenpox virus or the shingles virus. And unlike in children, where the illness can be quite mild, in immunosuppressed patients, people can get very sick from it. So it can range from just shingles or a painful rash. But people can get what we call disseminated zoster, or very widespread infection that can affect their lungs and other organs, and people can get very sick. So it's very important for us to prevent that reactivation, and that's why we recommend patients to go on antiviral treatment as part of their myeloma treatment. So the out in the community, so the Zostervax is a vaccine that is given to the older population through their GPs, and that's to prevent that from happening. But because it's a live vaccine, there is risk of it actually causing an infection. So if you give it to a myeloma patient who's heavily immunosuppressed on treatment, then the risk, it's too risky that people can get infection. But now there's the new Shingrix, I hope I'm saying that correctly, Shingrix recombinant vaccine, which is inactivated. And so that is safe to use in our patients.
Right. So if there's someone listening to our conversation today and they're thinking, I'd like to have a bit more information about the shingles vaccine that you've just talked about, that is the non-live version of that zoster vaccination, who's the best person that they talk to? Is it their GP, their hematologist, oncologist,
I think either would be fine. I've just had the discussion, I guess, with one patient in particular who had been introduced to it by her GP, and they wanted to clear it with me. So I think either or, but a lot of GPs are administering it now. And I think given that the GPs often look after all the other vaccines for our patients, I think it's important to have them involved as well.
Great. And some people who are living with myeloma are having a sort of supplement, or they have an additional it's about GCSF and immunoglobulins, just so you know.
Yep.
I'll give you the heads up. All right. So some people living with myeloma may have, as part of their sort of treatment plan, medication or supplementary sort of therapy with drug called GCSF or an infusion called immunoglobulins. Can you tell us a little bit about those two things and what sort of populations that you see in the clinic would you recommend them for?
Yeah. So GCSF or filgrastim, so that's a growth hormone for the bone marrow for helping patients who have problems with neutropenia. So that's one of the white blood cells. And I recommend it, I guess, so for patients who have, they may have neutropenia related to their disease, particularly at diagnosis, or if they have progressive disease and they have a lot of myeloma in their bone marrow, or they may have neutropenia as a consequence of their treatment. And so I think particularly the example of when we're starting treatment for someone who's got a lot of disease in their bone marrow, it's really important to try and get the treatment in to get disease control and try and maintain dose intensity of the treatment, so not reducing the dose of their medication. And if we can support patients by boosting up their neutrophils to maintain that, to put them up into a safe level where their risk of infection is reduced, then that can help us get the myeloma better under control. And I guess additionally, some people are more sensitive to the medication. If we look at people sort of towards the other end of their journey with myeloma, their bone marrow has been exposed to a lot of treatment. And they can be more sensitive to the side effects, the toxicity of the treatment. And so helping patients, again, with the GCSF injections to boost the neutrophils to allow delivery of the treatment is important. So some patients when they get, or all myeloma patients at diagnosis should get their immunoglobulins measured just as a baseline, and often at sort of various time points along their treatment course. And this is really important if patients have problems with recurrent infections, particularly chest infections, upper respiratory tract infections requiring multiple courses of antibiotics and sometimes trips to the hospital. Because in patients with low normal immunoglobulins, and I'm talking the IgG level, which is what we measure, if they're low and patients have recurrent infections, we can actually replace their immunoglobulins with intravenous immunoglobulin or IVIG, which is immunoglobulins from blood donors, which are pulled into an infusion. And patients are administered these every 4 to 6 weeks as an infusion. And this is to help boost up their antibody levels to help prevent infection. So if patients have had problems with recurrent infections, it's something that should be checked. And then patients can be started on that treatment.
So when we're talking about, people's immunoglobulins being low, just thinking back to the start of the conversation about that, the way that the immune system is affected by the myeloma and that the humoral response that you were talking about being affected. So that, have I got that right?
Yeah, exactly. So so some patients with myeloma, their normal plasma cells aren't too suppressed, and so they may have normal immunoglobulin levels plus their paraprotein. But some myeloma patients
they may not have many normal plasma cells there at all. So even though they've got that paraprotein, as I said, that's a non-functioning, useless protein. And then their minuscule or very small population of normal plasma cells just can't make enough antibody.
Yeah, great. And I know in our practice we've been giving intravenous immunoglobulins for a long time, but we've seen more of a shift going towards the subcutaneous, so the injection under the skin of the immunoglobulin. Have you seen that as well in your practice too?
So in at our hospital at the Alfred, we're still administering the intravenous immunoglobulin, which is every 4 to 6 weeks. I don't have any patients on the subcutaneous formulation, but I think given that patients are able to sort of self-administer at home, I think moving forward, particularly with health systems being stretched, that it may well be the way that we go to make it easier for patients and the health system.
Yeah, great. So just before we wrap up, did we want to have a bit more of a discussion about the ins and outs of vaccinations, or do you feel like you've kind of talked about that in enough detail?
I think just in terms of when the best time to get a vaccination is, there are, I guess, what we should ideally do, but I think often we have to take a pragmatic approach with this. So ideally it's best to vaccinate people a few weeks before treatment starts, but often we don't have that opportunity, particularly if patients are unwell. And really it may be that you just, I guess, vaccinate and accept that patients may not get as good a response as someone who's untreated, but some response is better than nothing when you've got to balance the risk of delaying treatment. And I guess it's important for patients to get their flu vaccine before the start of the flu season. And I know a lot of the GPs I work with are very proactive at getting the patients vaccinated, and often they're vaccinated before we even have the vaccine available in the hospital for the staff, which is great. And then I think it's important to note that after people have had treatments such as a stem cell transplant, they really need to undergo a full revaccination program as if they're a newborn baby, basically, with their a new immune system. So patients at our hospital at the 6-month time point start a vaccination program that goes over the next year or so of different vaccines. So including additional ones like the diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, hepatitis, and that sort of thing. So, and I think just to finish up here, we haven't touched on COVID because that itself deserves its own podcast, but it's a question I get from all of my patients. I recommend they all have the vaccine because they're all at increased risk. It's important for their caregivers to be vaccinated. And I think that being said, for other vaccines, particularly the flu for our patient, it's really important to have that sort of protective ring around patients. But in terms of timing for like COVID vaccination in particular, I think you get it when you can get it and as soon as you can get it, because some protection is better than others. And because of the difficulty with organising vaccinations, I think it's a bit tricky modifying treatment. Just get the vaccine.
Yeah, right. And I mean, we're in the midst of the COVID pandemic now in Australia, 2021, October 2021. But there may be some people who are listening to this outside, you know, fast forward a few years' time, and hopefully we'll have wiped this from our memory and all recovered and back to normal. But, you know, people who are living with myeloma have had infection at the front of their mind from the time that they're diagnosed. The events of the last couple of years has really given quite a lot of public attention. But these things that I suppose we're all doing as a community at the moment are things that have that people with myeloma have been doing to protect themselves for a long time. And so lessons that we've learned from this pandemic about reducing the risk of infections, protecting our vulnerable communities, vaccination, all of those things, they're not going away, and they're important for all aspects of viral infections or bacterial infections that we encounter day to day.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I really, I guess, echo your sentiment that this is these measures that we're doing as a broad community now are really those measures that we've been talking about with our patients and their caregivers for a very long time. And so I think, as you said, it's going to be with us for a long, with us, I guess these measures will be with us for a while. But I think even moving forward, we've seen how these measures have reduced the risk of flu, or there's been minimal flu the last 18 months. And I guess in addition to all those vaccines I mentioned, I'm sure there'll be a yearly COVID booster that all of our patients undergo.
Yeah, great. Wrapping up now, Anna, is there anything that you wanted to just sort of draw a spotlight on, or some take-home messages as a sort of concluding comment?
Yeah, so I think hopefully we've been able to highlight that myeloma patients are susceptible to infection regardless of whether they're on treatment or not, and that it's a really important facet of their treatment journey. And I guess education of patients and their carers is really important, and not just at the start, but I think along the journey is sort of subtleties of their treatment or their disease progress can change. And prevention of infection is really important. So with those social distancing measures or vaccination, medications, and then making sure the people around them are protected as well.
Great. Thanks so much, Anna. On behalf of Myeloma Australia, I'd really like to thank you for your time today and your continual support towards our cause and all that we do at Myeloma Australia. We're really pleased that you're able to come and take some time out to have a chat, and I'm sure that the listeners will have got a lot of great tips and insight into the complexities of myeloma and the immune system. Thanks.
Pleasure, Nella. Thank you for having me along this morning to have such a great discussion, important discussion.
Thanks for listening to this episode of My Conversations. We'd love to hear from you, so send us your questions or topic ideas to our email address, nurses@myeloma.org.au. Whilst the advice and opinions of our guests is welcomed, this podcast provides general information and is not intended to replace medical care or the advice of your treating team. Please talk to your doctor if you have any questions about your diagnosis or treatment. Your doctor can answer your questions, talk with you about your treatment goals, and provide you with extra support.